Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
It had a revolt undertone to it.
Yeah. The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 164, a talk with David Banner. Banner is a Jackson, Mississippi-raised rapper who started in the duo Crooked Lettuce, but first came to most people's attention with his 2003 solo hit Like a Pimp and the record that followed, Mississippi the Album. That LP, which also contained the hit Cadillac on 22s, cemented Banner's name and style in the minds of rap fans nationwide. But there's a whole lot more to Banner than a couple of hits. He is an accomplished producer who made beats for T.I., Trick Daddy, RZA, and Lil Wayne. He's also an actor who has been in the films Black Snake Moan and This Christmas. He's even recently hit the lecture circuit with his God Box lecture series. But most importantly, he has continued to challenge himself and his listeners with thoughtful, important music. His new album, The God Box, is out August 19th. We talked with David Banner at the Dream Hotel downtown in Manhattan. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or your podcast app of choice. Once you do that, you'll be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should check out our interview with another Southern rap pioneer, Luther Campbell of 2 Live Crew, on episode 116. Also, consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just a dollar a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share some bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to guests after our main interview is over. For August, we've got some extras from the Chino BYI episode. He talks repelling taggers, European graffiti, and a famous actress who had her graffiti artist boyfriend stolen by a future huge pop star. Become a patron by August 12th at noon Eastern to get access to the file. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's the man who knows what's in the God Box, David Banner. You know, I wanted to start with you by kind of taking it back.
Mm-hmm.
And you did an album back in 99 in a duo called Crooked Lettuce.
Right.
Which is a fucking great album. And one that
which
really
was supposed to actually be a 4.5-5 mic album, actually, for that time. But we ended up finding out that Def Jam had an artist that was released that they, you know, super big artist at the time that didn't have what the source thought was a great album. So they couldn't give us, you know, 4.5-5 mics and then trash that album because Def Jam had, you know, had so much so many ads in the magazine. So I come to find out from somebody who used to work at the Source magazine was that we weren't able to get the 4.5-5 mics. I think we got 4 or 3.5, one or the other.
Crooked Lettuce album, Gray Skies, got 3.5 mics in the April 1999 issue of the Source.
I was going to ask if you felt that album was underappreciated overall.
Oh, well, I don't, like, I'm not a guy, even though, like, I know that the God Box is a 5-mic album, you know, it's how the people feel to me. And Crooked Lettuce only, I think, sold like 19,000 copies, but I only think they shipped 30,000 anyway. We were a tax write-off. Actually, a quick story about that. I moved to New York homeless, and I stood out in front of Penalty every day until they put our album out. They had shelved us. So I think Neil Levine was scared of a 6'2" black man who was there every day when he showed up to the office. So he he went on found a way to put that album out so I can go back to Mississippi. True story, though. Seriously,
wow.
True story.
There's like one book about Southern hip hop that mentions that record.
The book is called Third Coast, Outkast, Timbaland, and How Hip Hop Became a Southern Thing by Ronnie Sarig.
Otherwise, unfortunately, people don't really talk about it that much.
Well, you know, hip hop usually comes through the eyes of, you know, somebody from New York, you know, or now because L.A. took its spot. It normally wouldn't have even been from L.A., but L.A. sort of took its spot and physically took its spot. Right. I think the South did it more from a financial perspective because us in the Bay, you know, we were making so much money independently that, you know, they had to recognize what the South was doing. So we took it from a financial standpoint. But I even think, you know, our place in hip hop is sort of like a glass statue because, you know, I think until we have our Puffs, our Will Smiths, our Ice Cubes, that it, you know, it really won't count. You know, T.I. is on his way to being that Ludacris is close, but, you know, until we have our movies that really show Southern life from our perspective, you know, until we're actually able to control something. Like, once the movement leaves the South, you know, if we don't have any companies to show for the billions of dollars that we made hip-hop or the music industry in general, then it's just high-paid slave labor to me.
There's a big sense of place on that Crooked Letters album, both in terms of the lyrics and in terms of the sound of it.
Nobody gives a damn about my place of Overton, Jacktown, Browns, and empty shells left on the ground, still smoking, y'all. About being with the South, and yo, keep popping that junk, I knock the front out your mouth. Now look at your crew player, we left them in the mess. David Banner, Kamikaze, Texas Trader, to the gym. It's show nothing.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Explain what you mean. I don't quite understand
well,
what you mean.
Well, you know, you're repping Mississippi. Mm-hmm. A lot of the songs are very geographically specific. You know, you talk about your time. There's a, you know, song about your time in college, for example. Mm-hmm. You have the Tupelo tune.
Yeah.
While in the dorm, I stay warm, trying to get in some ass. Felt the Lord in my principal cook white, make it to class. I on my feet, half drunk, trying to get on some beats. Moms and pops separated, brought me close to the street. And to the divine in the rhyme, when it's like I say, who would have ever thought I'd be graduating next May? I'll be a student.
Was that something you guys were conscious of? Like, hey,
oh,
we
yeah.
want to give the listener a sense of where we're from?
Oh, yeah, because at that time, we definitely, no one else was. But all of my records are that way. You know, probably up until like my third record where, you know, I moved into being more of a global artist. And I think that was one of my few mistakes, is homogenizing myself.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I used to like about hip hop, and I wish hip hop would get back to where it was, and people try to blame it on the South, but everybody sounds like, you know, not everybody, but most rappers sound like they're from the South. So they're blaming it on Southern music. It's not Southern music. It's the commercial, them commercializing hip hop. I like the fact when I hear West Coast music, I want to hear, you know, hey, homie, over here dumping on fools in my car. I want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? I want to hear about Crips and Bloods in West Coast music, not Crips and Bloods in New York music. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I like, you know, when I listen to New York music, hey, son, what's up, Dun, you know, jumping out the bubble, yo, like, that's what I want to hear. I want you to take me there. I want you to take me out of my situation, because that's what Tribe did for me, and hopefully that's what Outkast did for other people, and that's what Ghetto Boys did. That's what N.W.A. did. Like, we didn't know that gang violence was like that, but when we heard N.W.A. say, fuck the police, that meant something. And we needed them. We needed N.W.A. We just didn't need 100,000 N.W.A.s.
Right.
You know?
You know, that was true not only lyrically, but musically as well. I know you've thought a lot about sounds and their relationship to geography. I read an interview you did where you talked about, you know, the closer the producer moves to Miami, at least this was the case 10 years ago, mm-hmm. the faster the beats
got. Faster the beats were, yeah.
For the history history of how Miami got to have those fast tempos in the first place, check out episode 116 with Two Life Crew's Luther Campbell.
The closer it was to Texas, the more that it slowed down, yeah. Right.
Is that still the case in this kind of like age of the internet, or has stuff become a little more homogenous?
Like, oh, it is homogenized, but I don't think it's because of the internet. I think it's because of commercialism. See, I'll give you an example of just how America just ruined shit and how parasitic one, white supremacy, two, America is. Pop music is only popular music, but record labels try to tack a sound on to it so they can reproduce it mm-hmm. over and over and over again until it's totally burnt out. You know, that is one of the reasons why I don't let people into the studio when I produce. That's the reason why they try to take you off of drum machines and get you on Fruity Loops so they can create an algorithm, you know, so they can create a template for how you do music. And then just like they're doing it, then they move you out. Mm-hmm. Once I know how black people make music, I'm scared of black people anyway, so we could just take them out and get our cousins to do it.
Right.
You know. You know, I always tell people, you know, they say R&B is dead. And I say, well, Sam Smith is doing well. Justin Timberlake is just fine.
Right.
Daly, who is my homeboy, is doing great. You know, Macklemore is not having any problem selling rap records. You know, so in saying that, I just think that it's not the internet. You know, it's commercialism. And commercialism, the internet is just commercialism in a box.
You know, to take it back to Crooked Letters for a second, you produced the majority of Gray Skies.
Yes.
And then, you know, Gensu Dean did about 5 beats on that. The beats on Gray Skies are very different than the stuff on Mississippi, on your solo record. How would you describe the music on Gray Skies?
I was a backpack rapper then. I was a battle rapper at that time. Like, there was at a time, I never lost. I was that good. Like, that's why it's funny to me when people see the hip hop cipher.
They got my stomach in a knot. I'm bent over praying to God. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. Ankles tied to some chains. I want to say yes, but it's no. Like Tulane. I'm an N.O. Not many blacks make it to the show. Jay Leno.
Banner made a standout appearance at the 2014 BET Hip Hop Awards cipher.
When I was broke, are you proud to sell dope to your own folks' house, nigga? I meant it how it sounds, but what are white rappers when they mold Mike Brown down?
Loretta be fine. Or listen to like the God Box and hear the verses on the God Box and I'm surprised.
These crackers got drones, they flying, they saucers. Keep your white Jesus, don't pray to your crosses. They burning our churches, crit pass me the Uzi. I know how to work it, I know how to squirt it. No Martin, no Luther, no King. No marching, no choirs, don't sing. The same Christian lovers that raped their grandmothers and hung their grandfathers from trees. They enemies.
Didn't really do research. I was a battle rapper, but Southern people don't really like battle rap. That's mm-hmm. more of a West Coast, an East Coast thing, you know? And I actually have feelings against battle rap anyway now, because to me it's sort of like public emasculation, sort of like a slave hanging. The two big black bucks battle each other in front of people and, you know, emasculate each other. But anyway, I think the biggest difference was just that I was a backpack rapper back then, and you know, there was so much pain during that time. Is right when around the time when Jackson, Mississippi, was the murder capital of the United States, and hip hop was my escape. And I used to always tell my friends, like, why do I just want to hear, you know, the same thing that we see outside?
Yeah, you're working through a lot of trauma on that record. You mentioned a cousin who
my cousin Michelle.
The desire to pierce my brain with this bullet from hell. The dad Ryan 99 killed my cousin Michelle. One wrong turn, her body flew 25 feet. Her skull split up into bits on the cold concrete. And in the street.
No, she wasn't killed. She died coming off the Dan Ryan. She hit black ice and slid out, and was they said she went 25 feet, 50 feet in the air, literally straight in the air, and landed on her head. Yeah.
I feel like you were working through something internally writing about her on that record?
Maybe that I'm all meditative and have several therapists now. maybe that's what I was doing. But back then, it was just writing. And And ask me about that later on in the, because I think that's something I haven't talked about in any interview. I want to tell you something that my therapist told me about me even changing into this David Banner that I am now, as it pertains to my mental health. She was talking about the David Banner that most of the world knew.
Mm-hmm.
She said that my anxiety rose when I became a more meditative David Banner, because old David Banner, if I hated you, I would say, fuck you, sucker, dig, die. And it was out. And I felt, and then I move on about, now, you know, I'm so deep and introspective and, you know, maybe we should sit down and talk.
Right, you have to take a deep breath. Like, do they have a point?
Should I go inward? And what did I do to offend him? You know, and there's a lot of things that are encapsulated in that. Whereas David Banner didn't just take none of that. I just threw it back out at the world and kept it moving. But as far as, what was the question?
You know, about writing about, you know, stuff that happened to you during the Crooked Letters era. I've had a lot of people on the show, I guess, to set the context up, who talk about writing as a way of dealing with trauma.
Yeah. I don't know if I looked at it like that. With me, it was more repping for my people. You know, my motivation back then and the Mississippi album was always just to change the way that people felt about Mississippi. And then, I black people in Mississippi, and then it went from black people in Mississippi to repping the South, then impoverished black people all over the world. Because now I'm global, and I had a chance to go to Tanzania and, you know, to see the colonization, you know, of Africa, and see that the struggle of the Tasmanian people, you know, and the annihilation of the Aborigines in general, you know, and their melanated people. And we try to section our struggles off, but, you know, what black people are going through in Harlem is no different than what people are going through in Mississippi and in Chicago. And the racism that people go through in England is so sidestepped. It's so whitewashed and pretty. You know, the laws that they have in London, you know, three black people. No, it wasn't. I think it was Montgomery. Nasheed was in. Like, oh, they got laws where more than two black people, you know, can't stand with each other. You know, it's considered a gang if three to four black people are standing on the block together, just talking.
And that's true if they see you walking with the crew. If you don't know, that means more than two. I'll tell you what they'll do. They'll pull over, hunt you over, kick your ass, might stick to your shoulder. I know it's unjust.
We couldn't find the exact law Banner was talking about, but we did find an article about it happening in the central England city of Leicester. Laws of these types have been used throughout the world to control quote-unquote unsavory elements. We've also provided a link in the show notes to a report about the United Kingdom's controversial joint enterprise law, which deals with these same issues.
So that means if I had a family of four, you know, and I'm walking with my four sons, I can't be with my, like, it's racism is, and white supremacy is everywhere. But I think with me and Crooked Letters, it was just repping Mississippi and repping my people. And I think as I grew as a man, and, you know, it started with my block, and now my block is the world.
On that record, you know, on the song Pimp Shit, there's a brief section where you talk about, like, smart houses, smart appliances, and you talk about kind of the phasing out of paper money stuff.
Yeah, Brad talked about, I remember that was the song, though, yeah.
That paper money, soon we ain't gonna have no more. Right now they building houses with computer chips in the flow, so they know when you get home and when you ain't with the smart bank. You in the paint, let me break it down. It costs a new world foundation. And when you use it, they know your exact location and what you spent.
Yeah, I remember stuff that was just beginning in 99, and now it's gone pretty far.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we were on some shit, to be honest with you. There's this song called Trill, and to this day.
That's the one where you talk about the psychological damage of seeing white Jesus.
Because I don't even mourn for the day. I can't get these white pieces of Jesus out of my head. The preacher's Bible said there's no depiction of Christ, but then they lied to a
brother. Now my mind ain't right, cause if God is white, them black folks ain't shit. But they know that he wasn't, but they couldn't run the risk of their child raising one that looks more like fail. They'd rather play in my mind and send his soul to hell. But I'm here to tell.
Wow! Yeah. He said it and I didn't say it. Like, that's what I mean. Like, the young me, like, I was sitting back like, wow, bro, like, the stuff that I was thinking about back then. And, you know, I wasn't as well-read as I am now. You know, it was just stuff that I saw. And I've always been good of seeing through the minutia,
mm-hmm.
looking at what things actually are. And actually, in some ways, and I never talked about this on any interview, I think in some ways, back at Crooked Letters, I was talking about the person that I would soon become. And now I am a healthy synthesis of both. You know, I was on one, like way on the other side of one of the pendulum. And then I swung all the way back to the other side. And now I'm right in the middle. Even with my meditation, I had become too zen-like. I lost my personality. I wasn't fun to be with. You know, I'd become real melancholy. Now I'm just right in the middle.
And so Mississippi, the album, the record that kind of broke you wide open.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is one of the best rap albums. And actually, it's funny that Rolling Stone said that, you know, that year was in the top 50 albums.
Wow. But there are a lot more outside producers on that than in the duo. Why?
I don't think that it is. I think I did about 80% of that album, too. I think it was, yeah. Yeah, the God Box is the album that I really didn't do a lot on. It's been all, I've always done right at about 65 to 80% of everything.
Right, you know what I'm think it was just that in Crooked Letters you had one person doing five additional beats.
No, that's not true. Andy C. Did production.
Andy Creamer, aka Andy C., has worked with Chicago stalwarts like No ID, Common, Crucial Conflict, and more. In addition, he has worked with, engineered, or produced Mary J. Blige, Raekwon, Janet Jackson, The Temptations, Babyface, and many others.
Who was around Kanye and them? Gensu Dean, I think Gensu did too.
Eddie, Gensu Dean Alexander did, as Banner correctly remembers here, produced two songs on the Crooked Letters album, Caught in the Game and the title track, Gray Skies.
There were some producers on that album. It's just that all of us, I basically put the album together, and with the exception of probably Andy C. Like, I always brung in who I wanted. Like, it was usually always my vision, all of my albums. With the even me and Ninth wanted the album.
But I'm from Mississippi, where you let your nuts hang, and where the white folks let my ancestors do the same. Damn.
You know, that was Heap did the production, but the concept of the album was more of my vision. So even within somebody producing, it was usually all my albums I've usually had to say so on which tracks we use. So even though I wasn't producing the beat, you know, it was sort of within the scope of what I saw for the album.
Yeah.
You know?
That record moved towards what I guess you might think of as more of like kind of a crunk sound, the Mississippi, the album.
Hell yeah. I had an opportunity. Atlanta, still to this day, is my favorite city in the world. Mm-hmm. I've been all over the world. Only continent I haven't gone to is South America. And nothing has moved me like the spirit of Atlanta. And even though the spirit of Atlanta has changed, there's still this feeling like the only other city that I went, well, there's a couple of other cities. Melbourne, Australia gives me that vibe. Nashville, Tennessee, it's still music. It's still real instruments somewhere, you know, with new rap and one producer. So there's a lot more synth. But I even think Atlanta's starting to move back to, you know, the live instruments. But when I went to Atlanta, the spirit of Atlanta, the crunk movement, I think Mr. Braxton said the reason why people, you know, black people clung to crunk music the way that it did, because it had a revolt undertone to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like this revolutionary push, you know, even though John wasn't known for lyrics, just the spirit of his music was like, we're sick of the system and we just want to tear this shit up.
Can't cross that hoe.
Mid-Mississippi, like, I'll tell you the history of Mississippi. North Mississippi has always usually been Memphis, whatever Memphis was doing. Mid-Mississippi has always been Texas, even with the dope, because 20 runs through, right there, you know, yeah, straight through it. Yeah. And New Orleans basically ran, you know, southern Mississippi. Like, New Orleans is right at the bottom, right. next to the coast.
And you've had that relationship going through your whole career. Fiend is one of the guys you work with maybe the most.
Right.
Richard Fiend Jones is a New Orleans rapper best known for his time on No Limit Records. He has collaborated with Banner a number of times in his career.
The crazy thing was, I never liked doing what everybody else was doing. I've always bucked the system, always. And I went to Atlanta. So Jackson was real slow. Like, I mean, slow as far as music is concerned, because we were influenced by Texas. It was Texas music. It was more of the pimping Memphis and not the crunk Memphis that Jackson really, you know, clung to. And even in New Orleans, it was less of the bounce, which I liked a whole lot. And it was more like the slower Cash Money, which was BG, and the younger Wayne type of music.
Right.
We were into, like, Tila.
It was this piece that I knew back from ATC. Graduated and made it from the College of Beats. Now hold up, who you be? See, you know me. Try to act so low, down low, hush, hush, and low key. Now, though I ain't.
And I was introduced to Atlanta music on a trip right after Freaknik. And my roommate was from Atlanta in college, and I got a chance to see Atlanta, and I saw all these black people making money. And, you know, one of my roommate's cousins had a lake in front of his yard. I didn't even know that was possible for black folks. And the spirit of crunk, I brung it back to Jackson. And I never forget the Lil Jon song I had, "Might Get Your Jaw Broke, Might Get Your Wig Split." And it's funny because that hook comes from an 8-bar line.
Might get your jaw broke, might get your wig split, might get your car shot up, might get your dough kicked, might get you kidnapped, might get your neck snapped. Don't get your feelings hurt, thinking this is just a rap.
But Lil Jon made the beat. That song changed my city because, like, that song was outlawed in the club. You couldn't play that song until after 12. Because anytime you put that song on, you're not making money for the night. So go ahead and get all your people in the club. Because as soon as they hear "Might Get Your Jaw Broke, Might Get Your Wig Split," it's popping off.
Yeah.
And I think that I brung, and I don't think people think about this, I brung like a lively spirit to the city. That's something that I'm proud of.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I got to sit down with Greg Nice. And he was talking about the beginning of his career, mid-80s, when he was starting out, when he was a beatboxer, before he even rapped. He was working with Tila Rock, and among the producers he was working with at the time was Kurt Mantronik.
Mm-hmm. He's amazing. He is my inspiration to create music with machines. I learned a lot from being around him, watching him. I'm happy to say that I see all of the people that came and went and that's here today, and he's exceptional. Curtis, man, I know how people bug out on me, and I'm like, man, I learned from that guy. He's crazy.
And I know that those guys were big influences on you. Can you talk about the electro-funk and how you...
Very, very big influences on me. You know, Greg Nice, we did a song together when we were in Crooked Letters. I worked... These songs didn't come out, but we did songs with Greg Nice, Positive K, Marley Marl. But that's something that people don't know about me. I started off on Stetsasonic. I started off on Mantronix, Tila Rock. I had a uncle who was a DJ, hip-hop DJ. And for some reason, he wanted to move to the South and become a blues DJ. And so he gave me all his hip-hop records. And these were early rap records. And so my influences were a little bit different from other people. And that may be the reason why. It's funny because if you even listen to Get Like Me, because people don't study and they don't look, I took that same breakbeat feel from Electric Relaxation. Because I was a hip hopper, I just took it and put Southern drums on it. And Get Like Me was dun, 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 Get Like Me. I haven't seen a Chevy with a butterfly dough stunting in the with 808.
Right.
And it came from just my dexterity, you know, just as far as Tila Rock and Mantronix and those types of groups. They were really, you know, a heavy influence on me. But just like early hip hop in general, you know, people are surprised when I talk about like artists like Jamalski, and you know, I'll talk about Digging in the Crates, Showbiz, and AG Diamond. Yeah,
you've been open about them being big influences.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all of these types of groups, Hobo Junction from the West Coast, you know, Saphir, all of those types of people. People don't even know that I was almost the position that Exhibit had in the Liquid Crew.
The Liquid Crew is a West Coast hip-hop collective that was founded in 1992 by King T and had the Alcoholics as its first members. Exhibit was recruited into the crew by Alcoholics member E. Swift.
Their manager at the time had asked me to move to L.A. from Mississippi because they saw me in a freestyle battle. It was like, yo, we want you to come get down with the crew. I'm like, man, I ain't never been to L.A. before. I'm not moving all the way out there. And I know nobody in L.A. And then a couple months later, or about a half a year later, then Exhibit took that spot, and which now is a great friend of mine in hip-hop. But
right,
hip,
someone you've produced for also.
Yeah.
Amsterdam to Tokyo, longitude only I can know. Latitude is my attitude, fall in place like a domino. I ain't come here to make no friends, cause I'd rather be feared than loved. Scared to death that I move this mountain to get to you with this shotgun slug. And I could never turn my back.
But just hip-hop, early hip-hop in general, literally, and I'm not just saying it saved my life. It gave me another world to go to. So shouts out to all of those.
A lot of your early beats, not for yourself, had this thing of a lot of acoustic piano mixed with the kind of Southern drums you were talking about.
My heart, I ain't never been dedicated to nothing other than blood stuffing. Your women cutting and pistol busting. We all grow. Asking my cutting brother, his stubborn ass responding. He doesn't. Ain't a lie. We all came from nothing but danger.
Right for wrong. Showing boys true love. So I pray for the better days. Face the bombs and the runaways. And I put my guns away and I pray for peace on Sundays. It's crazy.
What was it about that acoustic piano vibe that you like so much?
Well, not just the acoustic piano, but the acoustic guitar also. I've always liked natural instruments and natural sounds. I've always had this just connection. Between you and I have this idea that I want to do. I don't know if I'm ever going to do it. I want to do something that's called No Electric, where comedians, artists, we all get together and light candles and glow sticks and shit, and you can't have anything with electricity. You know, maybe the only thing that we allow, and we might make you run that off batteries, is the camera. But I want to do stuff with real drums, just the piano and acoustic guitar. And that means that everybody has to shut up in order to hear. And you're going to have to stand up and not allow technology. And there ain't going to be no voice boxes. There ain't going to be no Fruity Loops. It's going to have to be real music. You have to stand up and really sing. You have to know your verses. You know what I'm saying? You have to know how to have a talent. So, like, I've always been influenced by the, you know, just anything that's natural and the sound of it. I'll give you an example. I've always just been enthralled by when you play something like an acoustic guitar and, like, the hand sliding. When the knuckle hits the wooden part of the guitar. More than words. I'm in mastering right now. freaking out about that kind of stuff because I hate when my music is so compressed that you can't hear the breathing on the mic or all of those little small things that makes, you know, these ghost tones and sounds. And, you know, the, just to answer your question, acoustic piano, it's just, I don't know, maybe because I'm from the South in the church. That is always.
You're also no slouch with organ sounds. That Devin the Dude track he did has one of the greatest organ sounds I've heard in a long time.
Just think about this. When it comes to my production, I've always looked at it like a band. I love like orchestras and sounds. So that's sort of like the backgrounds. And, you know, I usually try to have a live bass or a bass sound, whether that's 808 or real bass or Moog bass. I would think if anything, what I was really, really known for and what made me a platinum producer was my love for the band sound. Like, rub that rubber band man, period.
Hey, who I mean? Rubber band man, wild as the Taliban. 9 in my right, 45 in my other hand. I'm in trouble, man. I always in trouble, man. I worth a couple hundred grand. Chain is all colors, man.
When people talk about David Banner's production, that's usually what most people go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, and, you know, football.
Which also has an organ style sound at the center of it, Rubber Band Man, with that melody that runs throughout.
Yeah, but it was the horns. It's the marching band mentality.
Mm, makes sense, being from Jackson,
right? And the halftime. Like, where we from, even I went to college at Southern University in Baton Rouge, the band was bigger than the football team. Actually, the band ran the whole college at the time. And people really came. Football was cool.
Right.
But people really came, you know, battle of the bands. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I really took that sound and that feel. If you really listen to most of my production, I always wanted people to feel like they were in a movie. You know what I'm saying? Like they were really coming, you know, to the places where we were from. And the band, the live band or the marching band was a big part of that.
And, you know, you produced a couple songs for people who are themselves top tier producers. I'm thinking specifically of Manny Fresh.
I'm a ball, ball. This is it, y'all. The shit, y'all. Niggas grab your dicks, y'all. Ladies in your best outfits, y'all.
And RZA, who you did a song for in the Bobby Digital phase.
Straight up the block.
Who got the biggest dick? Who got the fattest whip? Who got the baddest bitch? Who got the fullest clip?
Was that intimidating to make beats for beat makers of that caliber?
No, because I really believe I'm one of the best. Something I used to be that I'm not anymore. I'm not humble. I think humble is for slaves. I think I'm made out of the same matter that God is. So that God power runs through me. It runs through you. We are all connected. I think we are all moving components of the Most High. I don't know whether we the ass hair or the knuckles. I don't know what we are, but we all have that power in us. And I think some of us channel different aspects of it better at some times in our life, depending on what frequency we were vibrating on. Even in my life now, in order for me to become successful, I had to really sit down and be honest with myself because I have so many talents, from acting to rapping to performing and all of these different things, producing. I had to really figure out what I do the best in order for me to really, because I'm getting older now, I had to focus. speaking and producing is what I do. Like, that's what I am awesome. For some reason, people are touched by the things that I'm saying. That's how I became SGA president. That's how I run my business. Put me in a meeting, I'm going to bring something back. Maybe not what we want. I might bring back a black eye, but I will bring something back.
Yeah.
But production is what I do. Like, I've spent over 10,000 hours in front of a drum machine.
Right. As a side note, with that Bobby Digital song, there's a very heavy Jay-Z vocal sample in there.
Mm-hmm. To the top of the pops, nigga, London, Japan, and I'm straight up the block.
London, Japan, London, Japan, and I'm straight up the block. Did you have any pieces of that record left after Hope's people got through with it?
Oh, I don't know. When I produce it, and you know, they have to deal with that. As far as the publishing is concerned, I when I did that record for RZA, RZA was actually one of the reasons why I got into my multimedia company, because he was doing so much on the commercial side. And for some reason, it's funny. This is something most people didn't know. I really had a strong problem with RZA. RZA had said something.
He isn't the biggest fan of Southern rap, or wasn't for a while.
Yeah, RZA said some things on MTV about Southern music.
In a 2007 Herb magazine story called Wu-Tang Whittling Down Infinity, RZA had some harsh words for Southern rappers. He said, quote, "How has the South dominated hip-hop for the last 4 or 5 years without lyrics, without hip-hop culture really in their blood? Those brothers came out representing more of a stereotype of how black people are, and I think the media would rather see us as ignorant, crazy motherfuckers than seeing us as intelligent young men trying to rise and take care of ourselves."
And I had some problems. And then when we were in the studio to do the Bobby Digital song, I'm the type of guy, I'm not going to be around you if I got a problem. Like, that's fake to me. So after we had been cool for, I pulled him to the side like, "Bro, I got to be real with you. You said some stuff on TV, bro, that I had some problems with, man." RZA looked me directly in my eye and said, "Banner, I probably said it." He said, "Back in the early Wu-Tang days, bro, I was so high." He said, "I could have said anything. I don't remember none of that." He said, "So I apologize if I said it. I don't remember." I had to shake his head. He was so honest and so frank. He was like, "Banner, I don't remember none." He said, "Man, I was so high." He said, "I was so high off so much stuff, bro." He said, "I just don't remember it. I apologize."
Wow. You know?
But no, I'm not intimidated by my the person that I remember being in a little bit intimidated is working with Snoop. And Snoop is one of the people who made me a real producer and not a beat maker. Because I was in the studio and I was like, "Man, like, I ain't gonna say nothing to Snoop. That's Snoop." And Snoop stopped the beat and said, "Nephew, come in here and produce. Show me what to do. You're the producer. Be a producer. Do what you're supposed to do."
Wow.
Like, step up.
So he was
up.
The one leading you through, like,
and so
coaching him on vocals and all,
like,
that kind of stuff.
Not really. He just said, I know that you're talented. I've seen what you do. Like, do what you do.
Right.
So what that showed me is if Snoop can humble himself, all the rest of y'all motherfuckers is going to feel the wrath of a great producer.
Right.
But, yeah, man, like, I've done... Brother, I've done Quincy Jones. My life, confession of it was all trite. Now I got you on my sights, promise to do right. It's the truth that I'm speaking to you on this mic. I know the coupe drives fast, hold tight, girl. Give me the night. Dark is falling. You know the spirit. Bro, I've done Maroon 5. I didn't hear what you were saying. I live on all emotion, baby. Answer questions never. I've done things that I did all the music for the World Cup for Gatorade. I did one of the top Gatorade commercials in history.
Banner produced a popular 2014 commercial that revamps the classic Disney song Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo from Cinderella.
Man, that drum machine has taken me all around the world, bro. I was in Shanghai. You know, I did music for the international release of Mercedes-Benz, the A-Class. What I was telling you out in the hall, man, there is no failure. Bro, I was homeless when I got my $10 million deal. I was sleeping in my van. So for me to go from sleeping to a van, let's say if at the end of the day, even though my life, I'm going to be a billionaire one day, just with my business acumen. But let's say if I went back to Mississippi. I'm a semester and thesis away from my master's degree. If nothing else, I can go be a teacher at a college in Mississippi for $80,000. The average person in Mississippi makes, you know, around $28,000. There is no failing in my life. That's what I was telling you about stress. So don't much intimidate me.
Wanted to get to some of your new music, mm-hmm. On Before the Box and
which is awesome sauce.
Yeah. So there's a real sense of historical context in a lot of your new music. You're talking about...
Give me an example.
You're talking about the slave trade. You're talking about the Tulsa race riots. You're mm-hmm. talking about the Rosewood Massacre. You're talking about the MOVE bombing.
This for Tulsa, Oklahoma, this for Rosewood. This for Philly when the cops bomb the whole hood. This for Harlem when the pigs stop and frisk. All our folks from the Congo tell Belgium, sucker.
What is it like to try to have a historical context in a genre, in a media landscape, in a whole culture that is so hyper-focused, not even just on today, but on like what's next, what's now, what's coming?
Oh, you just got to make it jamming. See, people think that these kids or hip hop nowadays is just so clueless. Most of the historical reference rap is whack. Most of the spirit, Lecrae is successful, right? Mm-hmm. You want to know why? Because his shit is jamming. His shit is comparable to it like a Drake. It's comparable. And he just happens to believe in Jesus. I produce for Lecrae.
I know.
Yeah. Hey, look, fifth wheel straight hanging. Rip the grain, I'm swinging. It's Texas out of my roots, boy. Ain't no point in me changing. Nah, I'm 45, Trump banging. From Fair Park to South Acres. I hit Big T, then I hit Kings in the same date. No playing. I'm whipping.
Yeah. So like, he told me that. He's like, man, I hate when people call me a Christian rapper, Banner. He said, I just believe in Jesus, and that's what I think about most of the time, so that's what I rap about most of the time. I'm not a Christian rapper. I'm a dope rapper that happens to believe in Christ. So I'm a rapper who a dope rapper, one of the dopest rappers, and I happen to love black people. That's what I believe in, and I'm smart, and I'm sick of acting dumb, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So.
You've had this theme both on your song Pain and in recent interviews about how the pain of African Americans is the world's entertainment.
The truth, the facts always catch you. We fall behind. It's a fight between education and dollar signs. They kill us in them classrooms. No Columbine.
My name, pain. My name. Ask me what's my name.
My name is David Benefix from a place called Pain. Pain.
And I think that's mm-hmm. such a profound and you know resonant and kind of something that has serious elements of sadness to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
How did you first kind of put that idea together, start thinking about that?
Because I started watching news and I started watching movies and, you know, if, why can't, you know, there be a black superhero movie? You know what I'm saying? Why, you know, for the most part, the only the movies that come out of Hollywood, even that are produced by black people are either, you know, gang banging or slapstick comedy, which even black comedy is painful. Like black comedy is based off, like I like Aziz Ansari. Aziz and like, you know, you look at, you know, most, well, the two white comedians that I like, they are pain based, but most black comedians, if you listen to what Richard Pryor was saying, that shit painful.
Black people go to movies like that just on purpose to get scared, because black people aren't really afraid of anything.
Not really. They go on purpose. They want to get scared. Scare me for 2 hours. You got it for 2 hours, and I'm taking it back. Because after 400 years of this, you know we don't get scared of nothing for real. Only thing that frightens me is like getting seen walking down the street with a white woman by two black women. That scares me to death.
You know, if you listen to, you know, most of the stuff, any of our comedians, Cat Williams, it's, we laugh at it, but that pain is wretched.
Some of y'all be crying about bills you can't pay. Just, I don't know what I'm going to do about this light bill. They want the whole thing. They don't want a piece of it, a deposit. Just hit the blunt one time and see if it don't change your perception of what's important in your life. You just, I don't know what I'm going to do about this light. Fuck them goddamn lights. I got 12 candles. I've been waiting to burn them bitches.
But, you know, like, I listen to Aziz, and I like, that's funny, and I leave, and I feel good. But think about the dozens. You know, your mama, and then whatever mm-hmm. that may. Yo, you love your mama more than anything else in the world. That's painful. So I watched our death, you know, be, that's funny. Black reality shows, so we can go see, you know, black women tear each other hair out, and we looking for the fight. That's really what we looking for. You know, we are just the world's entertainment. So, you know, I was like, yo, well, let me turn this pain back in their face, and let me give them the history of this pain. And let me show them that in most cases, when people point at our pain, the same people who are pointing at our pain historically have been the cause of it.
Burn this motherfucker down. My grandfather got harm, I'ma put him in the ground. Grandmama got raped, house niggas so fake. Emmett Till got killed, body tossed in the lake. Mike Brown got shot, Jordan Davis couldn't save him. Yeah, I'm bucking at you crackers while I flee the plantation. Give a fuck about your flag.
But since you run the cameras and run the companies, then that's not pushed when it comes out, even if it's marketable. So I just do it to teach people. You know, even I did the research of haters, something as simple as the concept of a hater. When a slave would escape the plantation, they would beat nearly every slave. Well, they would beat every slave on the plantation nearly to death. So there was a deep hatred amongst black people who were free or who tried to get free. Because if you try to get free, we're going to get our ass beat. So that's why you had so many snitches. That's why you had so many haters. Oh, he's trying to get free. And then as the chains came off, I'm very cautious to use the word free. That's still deeply embedded in our culture. You know, that's why I said on Evel Knievel, how you say that don't affect us.
White folks, what you know about ropes? Yeah, what you know about trees and men swinging from them that look like me? How you say that don't affect us? Tuskegee, how you let them infect us? Yeah.
You know, how you say that, you know, watching our parents hang from the tree. Tito Lopez said something so deep on one of my songs. He said we had to play where they lynched us.
I'm staying religious, cause we stay in the trenches. And got to play where they lynches, then came to my senses. I bet them never came through my fences. You burn up your cross and I burn up your corpse. And I turn and bang and do the same to the witness. Hang him and dangle him the street looking up at his feet. So you never forget this, we did this for Martin and Malcolm. Even Mandela, Jimmy Lee Jackson, and then Mega Evers.
Think about when white people went off to war. Or they had conflict. They went somewhere outside of their homes to deal with that conflict. But the Klan came to our neighborhood. So like the same trees that our uncles and our grandfathers and our fathers hung from, the children had to go out the next day, the next week, and play around those trees. You know, when homies get killed in L.A., I walk, you know, every other block, my homeboy like, damn, Richard got killed on that block. You know, we ride past, oh, my brother got shot there. You know what I'm saying? And so for me, I took that pain and threw it back at them and gave them historical references because they always try to say that black people are just emotional. I'm emotional, but mine is fueled with a knowledge base and references and a book coming soon.
All right. Well, we'll leave it on that that teaser note. David Banner, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, brother.
David Banner was thoughtful and fascinating from the moment we first met in the lobby of the hotel. Within seconds, we were talking about transcendental meditation, and the eclectic nature of Banner's thoughts and interests is what made this conversation unique. I was glad that we got a chance to talk about Crooked Letters, a group that should receive far more recognition than it does for the public embrace of Southern rap. Banner is also underrated as a producer, so it's cool that he got this forum to talk about the musical side of his work. After the microphones were off, we had a short but very interesting discussion about hip-hop and the media. I hope that we'll get a chance to continue that conversation on mic with a part two sometime in the near future. The Cypher is on our summer schedule for July and August, so join us in 2 weeks when our guest will be Jarobi White of A Tribe Called Quest. We'll talk about Tribe, of course, but we'll also discuss his other lifelong passion, cooking. From Beats, Rhymes, and Life to Eats, Rhymes, and Life, you won't want to miss this discussion. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow, where you can help us out for as little as a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotaro.
Hey, homie, over here dumping on fools in my car.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Speaking and producing is what I do.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
I want you to take me there. I want you to take me out of my situation.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
Fuck you, suck a dick, die.
Special thanks to our Patreon supporter, Alex.
I lost my personality. I wasn't fun to be with.
Special shout out to Eamon for making this happen.
And I think that was one of my few mistakes.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
These were super fly, so.